This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it. The 8 at 8 o'clock. The 8 at 8, the Ocho. Eight stories for you to get your, on a Monday, get your week going. Here we go.
One.
All right, Astros. Mostly bad news from the weekend. The Astros, I would say that there's mostly bad news. They lost the series to the Nationals. One game in heartbreaking fashion, blowing a ninth inning lead, losing an extra innings. The other, in, I think, kind of infuriating fashion for me, just because it doesn't, I mean, they lose 6-0. They were winning the contact battle early in that game. They were hitting a lot of balls hard. And Washington was getting a lot of luck. But you lose 6-0, you lose 6-0.
You lose 6-0 when, okay, like Hunter Brown can be excused for being called, you know, called upon on very short notice after Christian Javier lands on the IL with a neck issue. But yeah, the bats completely disappear. I don't care what their team OPS is. I care about the fact that they can't seem to drive anybody in.
Yep.
If they see somebody out of the peripheral of their vision on second or third base, and they seize up and pee themselves.
Yep.
They literally are peeing themselves every single time they
puddles.
See runners. Except for Dubon. Dubon's the only one who's got a rock-solid bladder when it comes to that.
That's it. So they lose the series to the Nationals. They're off today. I mean, this is where... This is probably the thing I feel most acutely, maybe Astro fans can relate to, is that literally for the last 7 years, I get bummed out during the regular season when there's an Astros off day. I'm like, oh man, like that's the cool thing about baseball when your team is good is they're on TV 162 times. Like that's, you know, you've got them at the, you know, they are, if not your focal point watching, then there at the very least you're following that game all night. But most of the time, that's got front row status for me and Amy. During yesterday's game, I'm like, oh, thank God there's a day off tomorrow. Because, you know, like, I hate saying this because they've been so good. But my gut reaction after watching that game yesterday was like, that's 3 hours I'm not going to get back. Like, that was just a gigantic waste of time. So, I want them to get this back because I want them to go to the ALCS again. I want them to win a World Series. By and large, I really like the guys on this team. Like, it's a very likable group, but boy, they are playing some unlikable baseball right now.
You know what it is, too? This is where I start to get nervous and worry, and like even baseball savant is against me right now. Like they don't want the Astros to succeed, apparently, because I'm trying to look up the soft contact stats. The pitchers have been doing a really good job of getting soft contact, but when you can't do anything defensively to take advantage of it, it doesn't matter. Some of it's not all defense; like some of it's just flat out bad luck. There have been so many bloops for base hits between the infield and the outfield, just hitting into gaps on soft contact. But I do. A lot of it has been that where there's nothing to be done. I do wonder sometimes where the Astros for so long had done better at having ground ball pitchers in an era where everything was either strikeouts or bust. Like the Astros had a bunch of ground ball pitchers and they used the shift more aggressively than anybody else in the league. I wonder if this is starting to be some of the culmination of not having the shift out there, and that, yeah, you're inducing a lot of soft contact, but it's not actually producing any results
for
you.
That's interesting.
Very frustrating.
Yep, that's interesting.
Two.
All right, Texans, not much from over the weekend. They did sign Dari Ogunbowale, running back and emergency kicker for the
Weeks
Texans.
Will snap. Cameron Johnston will hold Ogunbowale, the running back, for the lead. Snap is down. The kick is up. And it's good! Dare Ogunbowale for three, and the Texans are back in front. Are you kidding?
Yeah, that was during the season. That was a Tampa Bay game in Week 9, a game the Texans won by 2 points. Dare Ogunbowale kicked a field goal in that game, if you recall.
A game that, yeah, I mean, it was very, very close and came down to the wire, and you kicked a field goal. I would say kind of gutsy by Nico to even allow that. To really trust Ogunbowale in an actual game time situation like that. There's a lot that can go wrong that's more than just the kicker.
That's true.
You know, there's a lot of timing involved here.
Well, and you kick it low, it gets blocked, you know, you go the other way. Yeah.
I mean, remember that first Browns game, the Browns didn't have their kicker, and they went for it every fourth down.
Yep.
And it worked out really well for the Browns in that regard.
It actually kind of worked out well for the Texans, and it allowed them to kind of get back in the game. Remember that? Like, the Browns had to start going for it on four. Remember, I mean, the Texans were getting destroyed that whole day.
Yeah.
And like with 7 minutes left in the game, they had a chance to go down by two score. You know, like it was. I mean, they ended up getting blown out. But it
ended up being as more of a. The kicker not being in the game didn't affect the game the way you would have expected, I guess, necessarily. Like, the Browns went for it, and it worked out for them a couple times to get a huge lead. But you're right. Then the Texans are able to claw back in because the Browns, when they failed on fourth down, instead of going for an insurance field goal, yeah.
Yep. So Dare Ogunbowale back on a one-year deal. Uniform release tomorrow, 10 a.m., Cal McNair, Hannah McNair in studio with Landry Locker and John Lopez at 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Three.
NBA playoffs, all eight series underway. I would say probably the stories that are most important. We don't have to go through all eight series here, but James Harden was fantastic yesterday against the Dallas Mavericks. He had 20 points in the first half. He couldn't miss. Finished with 28 points. The Clippers blow out the Mavericks. Philadelphia and Daryl Morey loses to the Knicks. Joel Embiid went out right before halftime of this game with what looked like a re-aggravation of the knee injury that kept him out for a while this season.
Yeah.
And then he was back for the second half, but it hurts to watch Joel Embiid run right now. it's tough to watch.
I thought the fun part of the weekend for me was the Lakers after, you know, trying to avenge their blowout from last year in the Western Conference Finals. D'Angelo Russell was 13 for 16 on the day. Does not look like he's ready to avenge his pathetic performance last year either. So
good stuff. Yeah. Denver, the Lakers built up a big lead in that game. They were up by like 15 in the first half, and next thing you knew, Denver rolled him up. It'll be interesting. LeBron did not look happy sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter of that game. I'll be anxious to see what the offseason looks like for LeBron.
Four.
The NBA Awards finalists, the league has named their finalists. Here's what you need to know. The MVP, three MVP finalists, Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic. I earlier referred to Jokic as the reigning MVP. That was 2 years ago. In fact, Joel Embiid is the reigning MVP. My apologies. No Ime Udoka as a finalist for Coach of the Year, and no Amen Thompson as finalist for Rookie of the Year. Amen Thompson gets squeezed a little bit because the NBA, if you miss your whole rookie season, you're still a rookie the next year. So Chet Holmgren actually is one of the finalists, even though he was drafted 2 years ago. But Seth Alperen Şengün, one of the three finalists for Most Improved. He's not going to win because he missed the last 20 games of the season thereabouts, but Tyrese Maxey, Kobe White, the other two finalists. So Alpi is the one Rocket getting a little bit of love in awards season.
Yeah, and that was the NBA press and media did start to catch on to just, you know, how much attention Şengün was attracting and commanding. The interesting offseason for the Rockets here coming up in a lot of ways.
Big time.
I think Harden, gosh. Doesn't it seem like forever ago that Harden was congratulating Embiid on that MVP? Remember, they were all sitting together watching in a room, and Harden did all the right things. Like, hey, like, this is the guy. Everything would always be awesome with the 76ers, and James Harden was cool in his role and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. We're less than a year removed from him blowing Game 7 against the Boston Celtics. It was not all that long ago.
It was less than a year where, gosh, how long ago is it that everybody was clamoring for Harden to come to Houston?
Last summer. That was this.
It feels like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Five.
Lots of gushing this weekend on social media over Arch Manning and his performance in the University of Texas spring game. 17 of 21, 343 yards, three touchdowns. I only saw the two of the touchdowns, which didn't really have to zip them into tight windows. These are guys just running past DBs on the whatever team, you know, the orange and white game or whatever it is they call it at the University of Tennessee. Now, I double-checked this because I don't even follow spring football from my alma mater, let alone the University of Texas. I did check with our resident Texas expert, Landry Locker, last night as I was, you know, kind of coming up with stories for the 8 at 8 here. I'm like, oh, yeah, Arch Manning, people will be interested in that. And I asked Landry, like, is this just social media going crazy over a spring game performance, or was he actually really good throughout the spring? And Landry said, no, he's looked really good throughout the spring. Like, he would, you know, like if Quinn Ewers weren't the anointed starter next year, you know, if it were a true QB competition, Arch Manning might have a real shot at winning the QB competition. He looked really good, I guess. So, but where do spring games in college football fall on the you can't really tell Jack Bleep scale, Seth?
I think it's kind of like the Senior Bowl and when it comes to the NFL draft, which is the practices matter as much as the actual game itself.
There you go. Yeah.
There, so I think it's like what, as you alluded to with Landry's assessment of the entire spring.
Yeah.
If it's a one-off performance in the spring game that it hasn't shown up in any of the practices, then you don't make that much of it. But this seems like it was a little bit of a capping off of a really good effort.
Yep.
But you're right. I mean, it's always, it's a blend of starters versus backups versus just some complete jackasses.
Yes.
So you never know for sure.
I just know the guys I've seen named MVP of the Blue Gold game in South Bend when I went to it. And like more often than not, it's somebody who doesn't even get on the field the next year.
Right. Yeah.
Six.
Cormani McClain, if you don't know the name, he is a former five-star cornerback who decided to go play for Deion Sanders at Colorado last year. And he is one of several Colorado players who are hitting the transfer portal going out. You know, Deion built that team last year, a team that ultimately finished 4-8 on the season, using the transfer portal to import a lot of guys to Colorado.
Yeah.
Now he's watching the reverse effect. He's seeing a lot of guys leaving Colorado, including Cormani McClain. Here was Cormani McClain. This looks like it was on one of his social media feeds. Like he was doing like an Ask Me Anything on Instagram or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And here's just the quick cut up of some of his thoughts behind leaving CU.
Change the narrative of everyone's thinking on my name. Be a part of a real and a great program that's going to impact me at my best ability. And yeah, ready to get to a new place and get to work. Yeah, I feel like I just don't want to play for the Clips. I actually want to be involved with a great leading program that's going to develop players.
Okay, so he's not in it for clicks. The big damning one to me, that the play, not playing for clicks is what got the headline traction from him, Seth.
Yeah.
I want to go play for a real program.
A real program, which he's a 6'2", 165-pound cornerback who started four games last year. Deion went off on the Colorado media last week for asking him about all these guys who are transferring out, saying, look, they're a bunch of backups. It wasn't the best look for Deion in acting like all these guys were bums who were leaving anyway.
He was punching down for sure.
Yeah. But there is some truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, the way he's come in and there's parts of Deion where he's got some old school elements to him that are just typical old school, but then there's some parts to him that really just kind of seem mean and snide.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he came in and acted, like basically told everybody who was there that they were trash. Like, oh, some of this stuff, it might start to wear on some guys.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Cormani McClain, it's hard for me to look at it objectively and say, okay, well, that might just be some sour grapes involved there, too.
Do you think they are better or worse than their 4-8 record last season, this coming season? Keep in mind, they're in the Big 12 now, not the Pac-12 anymore.
Did they?
Pac-12 was really good last year, but like I'm just pointing it out.
Yeah, does their offensive line, does it hurt them that much more or help them that much more? I don't know if it's kind of a wash and going to the Big 12. He's still going to have issues with his line, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I would guess, are they better than four wins? What's their over-under on the season?
I don't know. You know what? I'll look it up during the break. I'll save that.
Yeah, I'm going to say that their over-under is 5.5.
That's exactly where
that's
I was going to go with it. Yep, I think so too.
Seven.
I want to thank Mike Florio, who by going back and rewatching the OJ Made in America documentary, the seven episodes they did over five different days back when they released it, all the way back in 2016. So this 2016. This bad boy's been out there for nearly 8 years now. June of 2016.
So Florio's giving a review on it now?
Well, I think he, like a lot of people, went back and watched it after OJ died. It's gotten a lot of traction on Netflix. It's on Netflix now if you want to watch it. It's an ESPN production. It's a 30 for 30, but it's multiple parts. It's really good. But Florio went back and watched it, and he has declared that O.J. Simpson definitely did it. That he definitely, after rewatching the documentary, he can say with 100% positivity that O.J. killed Nicole Brown and Ronald Goldman. And the smoking gun, according to Florio, are the Bruno Mali shoes.
That's a smoking gun.
The smoking gun is the Bruno Mali shoes that O.J. in court said, I would never wear shoes so ugly.
Yeah.
And there were pictures that Florio pointed out of him doing sideline reporting on NBC in which he was wearing those very ugly shoes.
It's funny. You know, it's interesting to hear that from a lawyer's perspective because I guess the because that is more, I guess, he was caught in a lie there, I suppose, or what have you. I guess for me, the slam dunk confirmation of it all, where like you realize, wow, people are just going way too hard in various directions. Some of them understandable, given that, given some of the things the LAPD did in that investigation, like there were some roads that they could go down. The fact that was in an era when police could be called to a house for domestic violence multiple times and basically just ignore it. Like, that was what really came out of that documentary by my memory was, oh, wow, I didn't realize that it was so obvious that OJ had been an abusive SOB to Nicole Simpson. Like, that was something my teenage self didn't realize the significance of. Like, it's pretty simple. Most cases of, like, when a woman dies and gets murdered, the first thing you're doing is like, all right, is there a history of violence with the spouse or ex? Oh, boy, yes, was there.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
It was pretty damning, the history and what those guys, was it Brentwood where they grew up? The Brentwood police.
Brentwood,
just ignored.
Yep, Brentwood.
Eight.
Last one, RIP to an ESPN legend and the central figure on the very underrated game show Stump the Schwab. I love Stump the Schwab. Howie Schwab, the host of Stump the Schwab, longtime staffer at ESPN, outpouring of emotion for him this weekend. He's viewed as one of those. He passed away this weekend at the age of 63. He's viewed as one of those guys, Seth, that kind of was like real behind the scenes sort of key to that late 80s into the 90s ascension of ESPN, because he was a go-to for all sorts of things behind the scenes there.
I think he was Google before people were using Google for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He just was, they had one of these old school encyclopedic, probably a photographic memory, and ended up on camera in a way that he probably never anticipated, I'm guessing, with the Stump the Schwab game, where people would go up and try to compete against Schwab for sports trivia.
Yep.
Which is something we used to do more of. We used to do a lot more of back before you could just look it up on your phone.
That's true. It is true, yeah. I met him on a tour of ESPN that me and my dad won it in an auction, like a charity auction. This is back in 2008. I just started my radio career. So me and my dad and my kids went on a tour of ESPN, and Howie Schwab was our tour guide. He took us around the building. Yeah.
Oh,
he could not have been a nicer guy.
And he also, I hadn't realized, somebody had told me this a couple years ago when I just kind of made some offhand comment about him, that when he left, I always assumed when he left ESPN it was because he'd been phased out because computers had taken over. But he actually, if my memory serves me correctly, he had to care for his wife who had health issues.
He did, yeah. And then she passed, and then he remarried.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yep. And he remarried, and 63. Man, that's tough. So Howie Schwab, man, RIP. RIP to Stump the Schwab. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Circle back to the Astros for a minute. I've got two analogies. One that I'm going to steal from a friend of the show, and another that really dawned on me as I was watching the NBA playoffs this weekend. Who exactly are these 2024 Houston Astros that we're watching right now? That is next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. We will we'll circle back to the Texans in the next segment and at the top of the hour. It's a big week. It's a fun week, man. We got uniform reveal tomorrow. We got night one of the NFL draft on Thursday, where as of right now, we can just sit back with our popcorn and watch all the other teams, which I'm okay with this year. And then Friday's going to be fun, man. Friday, the draft party out at the out right there at the George R. Brown Convention Center on the street out in front of there, the Avenidas, the Americas right there. Seth Payne chopping it up with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on the broadcast. That'll be good. Looking forward to that. The Astros, I'm trying to find like doppelgangers for the Astros. Like, who are some teams or some dynasties? I guess one would be a team and one would be a dynasty in this case. That this feels like right now. And this popped into my head because I saw Ben DuBose tweet about this and I thought it was interesting. And he was wondering, Seth, if we were watching the baseball version of the 2013 Texans. You remember the 2013 Texans that
right.
Finished 2-14, came into the season as one of the three or four Super Bowl favorites. And then they were, I definitely think there's some validity to the comparison. And I think this team and that Texans team are both way more talented than their records were and are. Obviously, there's way more to play out with the Astros. I get that. But so far, injuries, some bad luck, some legendary boneheadedness have all plagued the Astros so far, similar to what plagued the Texans in 2013.
It's hard because, you know, obviously the Texans hadn't had nothing like the Astros successes leading into that disappointing year. So it felt that just felt like arrested development on the Texans. That, hey, they're about to make this big push, and it'd be like if the Lions ended up stinking this past season. Mm-hmm. You know, after the Lions had really made a push the year before, yes, and everybody liked them, and then all of a sudden they fell off into nothing. That's where this feels a little bit more. That 2013 Texans team felt a little bit like, I don't know, like what the Pacers were supposed to be, like various NBA teams that were just about to reach the brink, and then everything fell apart.
Or the Rockets of recent years, you know, with James Harden.
Different
circumstances, you know, guys asking to get traded, but whatever.
I think it feels a lot more like the Patriots, I think. It's that, you know, the Patriots lost Tom Brady, and even in Tom Brady's last year, they had a really bad loss in the playoffs. But then they lost Tom Brady and they went 7-9. They had a nice little push the next year with Mac Jones in his rookie season, but then two more losing seasons after that.
Yeah.
Where you don't go out. I mean, now, right now, the Astros are worse than the 2020 Patriots were. But, like, I guess the difference there is you don't have a Tom Brady that was lost. You know, like, it's not like there's a certain one single item that you can say, well, the Patriots lost. You can say the Patriots lost Tom Brady and they were never going to be the same after that.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, is Dusty Baker our Tom Brady? I don't think so.
No. I mean, I get the closest I could get would be the collective losing of Cole and Correa. You know, just the diminishment of talent. Like, it's not as talented a baseball team as it was at their peak. Yeah, I like that. The Patriots analogy is a better analogy just based on pedigree and things like that. The one that I was thinking of as I'm watching the NBA playoffs this weekend, if this season were to go into the toilet, let's pretend this turns into a reset season, you know, maybe where you do end up trading Bregman at the deadline or something like that. But it is, unless they just tear it down, which they really can't do. They've got, you know, they've got Altuve under contract and they've got Verlander. If he pitches 140 innings, he's here another year. Tucker's still got another year. Yordan and Christian Javier signed up for the next 5 years, whatever it is, all the way to 2028. And you've got a lot of young pieces that you're going to trade Jeremy Peña when he's still under team control for 4 more years. You're going to trade Yiner Diaz. They've still got a lot of pieces on this team to where if they have a truly poor year, it is going to be, I think, largely because the pitching staff was just decimated with injuries and they're just snake bit. Similar to the Golden State Warriors. After their Kevin Durant dynasty was over, you remember Durant goes out, they win 3 titles. Durant goes out with the Achilles, and they end up losing in the finals to the Raptors. And then they were sunk for 2 years. You know, during the COVID year, they were 15-50, and then the next year, I don't think they made the playoffs. And so they got some high draft picks. They got guys back from injury, Steph and Clay and Draymond Green and whatnot. And they traded for Andrew Wiggins. And they went and they one last gasp and they were able to get one more title out of it. Very unexpectedly. Yeah. They didn't even win their division that year, but they were able to squeeze one more championship out of it because they were the one team that had the pedigree and the experience and the combination of that along with enough talent and enough know-how and enough moxie to go win another title. That might be the best case of where we are with the Astros right now, is that you're heading into a year, maybe two, where it's almost impossible for you to fully reset. You do a soft reset that's maybe thrust upon you by circumstances, and you choose to do a few things, and then you come back and you live to try to fight another day in 2025 or 2026, and by doing things that you know are probably not long-term type stuff, but you're just pushing to keep that window open one more time.
I think that the one big thing that I keep going back to, even though it's become a running joke at this point, because the Astros just refuse to score runs, they still do have the second best OPS in the AL, top three OPS in Major League Baseball right now. They've got the best, I mean, for whatever it's worth, the best batting average in the AL, second best OPS, and yet they're just not scoring runs. That tends to swing back around, like the pendulum tends to swing back there. So I think they're going to start scoring more runs at some point. It's the pitching and the health thereof. The fact that Javier is now on the IL. Like, hey, awesome, we got Verlander back in less than 48 hours, but not Javier.
No, dude, it's like whack-a-mole. Like, you know, oh, this mole just came up. I got to hit this one. I got to hit this one. Dude, they're leading the league in batting average and OPS with basically an automatic out at first base. You know, like, that's incredible. It tells you,
I guess that's the biggest, that's the hole that is in the lineup does not make things fun at times. Obviously, it makes it that much worse. The sloppiness, I think, is what's most alarming to people when it comes to, like, it's one thing, like, we've been through various stretches, even with awesome offenses where you struggle with runners in scoring position. That's going to happen. The sloppiness fielding and the sloppiness on the base paths are the things that I think are most alarming to people, because it just looks so ugly.
Yeah.
It looks so, this team was always a team where I would be able to look at the Astros and watch the way they operated in a lot of respects, defensively, and say, man, look, you can look at their opponent when they're playing a bad team, especially, like, look at just like how careless and haphazard these other dudes are. And the Astros are now those careless and haphazard dudes. That's a hard thing to watch and really stomach.
I just had this article sent to me, Seth, off of Barrett Sports Media. They did a short article about the Media Alliance of Houston Star Award that I won last week.
The one that you won when you were named the best sports media person in Houston and probably the world.
Yeah. You added the last part, but
they
probably
implied
the world. Probably the world. They did that thing on Barrett Sports Media, and I always I appreciate the recognition. It's nice of them to do the article, but they did that thing where someone was clearly listening to a segment of our show.
Yeah, and they recap it.
Transcribe the quotes from it. Yeah, without any
context.
But
they don't necessarily always explain, like, when somebody's joking or not, right?
Right. Yeah. Hey, Ben, buckle up. You get a mention here.
Ooh.
The first paragraph congratulates me for winning the award, Sports and Entertainment Specialist Award, for his work on Payne and Pendergast in the morning in Morning Drive, along with partner Seth Payne. The two hosts began their show talking about the award. Payne said the award makes Pendergast, quote, basically the czar of sports and entertainment for the year, end quote. This is the best part.
It's accurate, yeah.
He then got to the heart of the matter, wondering if he and producer Ben would benefit from the award. Quote, is this going to get Ben and I some chicks, end quote.
The happily married Payne went on to wonder about how clean are these chicks going to be.
That's exactly right.
Thanks for putting my joke out there like I was serious about getting all these notorious sports groupies out there.
Yeah.
None of these sports talk groupies that are just, hey, listen, Barrett Sports Media, we don't need the rest of the world to know about the truth of all these sports radio media groupies that there are hanging outside 24 Greenway.
Oh, yeah. We call them radio rats. They're just hanging out outside the building. Yeah. I think whoever wrote this, and my apologies, it just says BSM staff wrote it.
Yeah.
I think whoever wrote it, I captures the fact that you were joking when they said he then got to the heart of the matter, wondering if he and producer Ben. Yeah. So I think we're in the clear. Plus, Brandy's a listener, so she knew that you asked that question anyways. It's all good.
Oh, no, she's good. Yeah, she was listening when I said that.
She's good. Yep.
What is it, the BDM staff?
BSM, like Barrett Sports Media.
BSM?
Barrett
that
Sports
That sounds
Media.
Like an acronym that I'm not supposed to know or something. Is that an acronym for something?
Barrett Sports Media. Yeah. It's an acronym.
Business
for
Service Management is the other one. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I thought it might have some kind of connotation.
Oh, like a connotation. Right. I got
like
you.
Like on a website or something. It might be.
Mm-hmm. text message Maldonado is our Brady. And the person puts sarcasm after that. We know.
We're not. He knows. Well, he doesn't want us to do a write up where we credit
true.
Him.
That's true. Yeah.
The texter went on to explain that Maldonado was the keystone to the whole operation. Mm-hmm. Maldonado, if it helps anybody feel any better, Maldonado is not being well received up in Chicago.
No, not at all.
People are I followed a thread the other day where somebody said, How did the people in Houston deal with Maldonado all these years? And I saw somebody reply to him and say, well, the fans didn't care because they were scoring so many runs. And a bunch of Houston fans clarified for him. It's like, no. Oh, we cared. Yeah, it was we definitely cared.
But it's somewhere in between. We cared, but even I would say up until like 2022 that Maldonado could not get any hits and he'd still be in the circle of trust.
Right,
but then
right,
he stopped being able to throw guys out and stop being able to catch the baseball, and then kind of like Jose Abreu, when you can't do anything right, you know?
You know that one graphic that was up, I can't remember what point last week, but it showed the number of potential passed balls that catchers had had, pitches.
Like balls in the dirt, yeah.
How many stops, yeah. That's one thing where I think Yiner has... excelled kind of quietly in that you haven't had to notice it. Whereas with Maldonado, he just let way too many pitches past him that didn't need to be passed.
That I could have caught, you know? They weren't in the dirt. They weren't anything. Like he just went to catch it and it sailed past his glove. It's just.
But Yiner had more blocks of potential wild pitches than anybody in the league.
Yep. CJ Stroud accomplished a lot his rookie year. The latest thing might be that he killed something. CJ Stroud may have killed something. We will tell you what it is coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
So this time last year, we were trying to make heads or tails of the S2 cognition test because Bryce Young had scored in the 98th percentile on it. CJ Stroud had infamously recorded in the 18th percentile. This was... I have to go back and Google. I think this is probably like one of, if not the biggest stories heading into the draft was the S2 cognition test.
I think, probably. That was the one because that was when everything changed and the tide turned. There was a pretty healthy debate. Remember when, when the Texans lost, when they won versus the Colts, There was a period of time where all the talk was, wow, the Texans blew their chance at CJ Stroud. Yeah, they blew their shot. CJ Stroud was going to be the guy and they blew their chance at CJ Stroud. And then I think it was the S2 test and various unnamed sources or whatever that kind of made Bryce Young the slam dunk number one guy because all this stuff that the S2 test showed, Bryce Young was going to be just so much better at it in the NFL than CJ Stroud.
Yeah. I don't remember. I remember liking, for me personally, I remember liking Bryce better than CJ from the get-go. But you're right, there were a lot of, it was definitely more split before the S2 test, for sure. And then that S2 test came out. And then CJ himself said, he said to me at the event we did like a month ago, the sit-down I had with him like a month ago for charity, that while the Texans were on the clock, he didn't know if the Texans were going to take him. He didn't think the Texans liked him. He said,
right.
He told me that. He said, I didn't know. He said, I didn't think the Texans really liked me. He thought he could go anywhere from 1 to 10 in the draft. And he winds up coming here, and the rest is history. I bring this up now Because I've heard neither hide nor hair of the S2 testers. Did they go out of business, Seth? Did they just put a bunch of boards on the building there and just not do it anymore?
I think that they, look, their main business wasn't in sports, as far as I understand. Like, I think the lion's share of their actual business might have been with businesses that use this as a screening test. And yet, like, half the NFL teams are using them last year. I'm guessing they still are this year, even if only if they had signed, like, three-year subscriptions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So when I had my blue check mark on Twitter, I didn't realize that it was going to be such a big deal. I just bought it because, like, okay, it seems like the thing to do. And then immediately it was, like, the dorkiest thing you could do. And I was like, oh, I bought a year of it. I'm like, oh, I don't want to be a dork. I don't want my blue check mark, but I had the year subscription, so I kept having a blue check mark all that time.
Are you going to renew your blue check mark when the time comes?
I don't know. I'm already, I lost it a couple weeks ago.
Oh, you did?
I just realized. I'm like, oh, I guess, no, I don't miss it that much.
Okay.
I feel like missing my appendix. I don't know.
Doesn't it allow you, a content creator, to do some things that you couldn't normally do in the way of videos you can put up and stuff like that?
Yeah, it does, but I don't do any of that stuff, so
gotcha.
It didn't matter. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
It's not dorky anime. It was like one of those classic things where it was like 2 weeks where everybody was dorky if they had one, and then everything kind of settled
in. Dude, it got politicized at some point. Like, it was...
I know. All of a sudden, it was like, yeah, it was. If you had a blue check mark, then you were pro-Elon versus anti-Elon. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. You caved into Elon. I'm like, no, I need this because I get at least one typo in every tweet. It's worth it for me to pay $89 a year just to be able to edit my tweets, because I'm like... I spelled of F-O again. It says foe, not of. I do that every tweet.
Yesterday, I called wide receiver. I wrote a title for a YouTube video, and I wrote QB. I had to edit it really quickly, and I ended up, like, I'd had QB in front of Josh Allen, and I ended up making it. It ended up looking like QB Stephon Diggs. And I just, which is fine, and that's a funny typo. I would say 25% of the corrections that people gave me, those people actually thought that I didn't know that Stephon Diggs was a wide receiver.
Those were
the ones that annoyed me most. 75% of them were pretty funny.
That's
like,
funny.
You know, just ribbing me and everything. I think 25% were, like, very earnestly, almost, like, politely saying, like, hey, Seth, just so you know, like,
Right.
So, yeah, the ability to edit does spare you those
moments. It helps me. I know that. So if the S2 scores were the big drama this time last year, I guess the closest thing we have now, and I'm basing this on articles, social media, and the TV in our studio at this time of day. Like, okay, what are they leading in with here? Quarterback, again, is the big topic, and I think it seems like, look, Caleb Williams is going number one to Chicago. I think much the same way Bryce Young, everybody knew, was going to Carolina probably last year.
Yeah.
So the drama sits at number two with the Texans. Now, the Texans, there was drama last year, but none of it was created by the Texans. It got created because they were keeping their mouth shut and not talking to anybody.
Well, this is where... Michael Beckman here says, I think from the get-go, everybody was mentioning Bryce Young. I don't remember anyone was saying C.J. Stroud over Bryce Young. Yeah, I don't know. I think that I'll have to go back and fact-check everything where everybody was, right in January and February.
Yeah. So this year, the drama spot is at number two again. This time it's with Washington, and it's with Jaden Daniels, the quarterback out of LSU, who I would take, if Caleb Williams were off the board, I would take Jaden Daniels with the number two pick. I like Jaden Daniels' game a whole lot. Here was Jeremy Fowler on ESPN this weekend, and this is how murky things are right now with the number two pick overall.
It does feel like that there is some smoke here. That's sort of undeniable at this point. I spoke to somebody who's involved in Daniels' process who does openly wonder, is Daniels looking at his options right now? Now, he has had interest in playing for the Raiders. That is real.
Sure.
Staying on the West Coast, reuniting with Antonio Pierce from the Arizona State days, but they pick 13th. It's going to be hard to make that sort of trade happen. Intrigue in Minnesota as well. That's not to say that he doesn't have interest in playing for Washington eventually. I cannot confirm that that's any different, but as was told to me, this has not gone as smoothly as it should for a player who's a viable candidate for the number two overall pick. It should be sort of pretty clear at this point. Talking to people in Washington, they still expect that Daniels is, you know, a good candidate to be the pick here and could very well happen, but there's just a lot of smoke right now. I've reached out to his agency. I'm told there could be a statement at some point, but nothing yet.
Okay.
It should be clear at this point. What are you talking about? I don't understand why it should be. Like, it was less than a year ago that you didn't know who the hell the Texans were going to take number two overall, and people thought that they might not take a quarterback at all. Like, what is supposed to be clear with a number two overall pick right now? Why? I don't get this. And then, yes, I'm glad you pointed this out earlier. Like, the thought that Jaden Daniels might be cool with playing with Washington eventually, what the hell does that even mean?
Draft,
or look like?
Dude. Yeah.
Yeah, like, eventually. Like, what, they're gonna draft Jaden Daniels, and then 2 years from now, Jaden Daniels will come down from a mountain retreat and say, I've decided that I'm cool with playing right. with Washington now? Eventually is now? What the hell?
Yeah. So that's the part of the calendar we're in right now. Is Washington, and here's the other thing, is that it should be clear right now. It should be clear we're like 2 days removed from them literally bringing four quarterbacks in, like that. That's the glitch right now that has Jaden Daniels upset. Reportedly, is that and his representation upset is that instead of bringing him in for a 30 visit, a top 30 player visit, by himself, which is what happens more often than not. Like CJ came in for his top 30 visit and there was a running back there and an offensive lineman there. We've never seen anything, to my knowledge, where somebody brings in four of the top six quarterbacks at the same time. And really four of the top five available quarterbacks for Washington, because there's no reason to bring Caleb Williams in. He's going to the Bears. Yeah. So four out of the top five available ones they brought in. Like, how can you say anything's clear when literally the team with the number two pick is bringing five guys in the week before
everybody.
The draft? Yeah,
right.
Should be clear. Yeah. Okay.
The speculation has been that this was some kind of an alpha test to see who the alpha was. If that is what they're doing, I think that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my entire life. Just because, like, if there's one thing we know about alphas when they're together, everything, it's like quantum physics. Nothing makes sense, They both, a lot of times two alphas will meet, and sometimes they'll get along smashingly. Other times they'll hate each other from the get-go. And I don't think it matters one bit or the other. It all depends on the dude that knows that, like, right now I gotta bide my time no matter how much I despise these other guys and want to squash them might look just as good as the guy that, just sits back and kind of lets everybody do it. So I hope for Washington's sake that this wasn't an alpha test.
Yeah.
I think it's the dumbest idea in the history of, in a long, long history of stupid things that teams do when they decide that they're somehow psychiatrists this time of year.
I think it's dumb, but I think it's the only explanation. unless they're like,
the explanation they gave was that the owner just was going to be available to meet all of them that same day?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But it sounds like they willingly had them all spending time with each other. You know what I mean? It could have been both, I guess. Could be both.
Fact check to myself. Yeah. Daniel Jeremiah's first mock draft on January 20th, 2023.
Okay.
Had Jalen Carter going number one overall. Bryce Young going number two to the Texans.
Okay.
So the Bears just took Jalen Carter. C.J. Stroud would not go until the ninth pick overall to the Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
So Carolina could have just sat and waited, apparently.
Apparently.
If they had bothered to read Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, they never had to make all those trades.
That's right. Yeah. So you just could have sat back and got the guy that would have been the guy all along. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we head into the 9 o'clock hour. Let's relive salty Nick Caserio from late last week, and also the fireworks. You guys like your Friday fireworks when you go to the Astros game. I think Friday is going to be fireworks downtown, but it's not the Houston Astros. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.